how much of what you're able to do is, you know, art and instinct and something you have to be born with, and how much of it is technique and practice?
A difficult question, if seriously answered, I must say. I was born, one, dyslexic, and two, I was born around storytellers who made a lot of sounds. And it put the two together, and what it meant is that I was very present tense. I was not a good, I wasn't a strong reader, but I was a great listener. I didn't learn to read until I was about fourth grade, but I had these old guys from the very earliest times that I can remember back that just told stories, and they cranked the cars, they threw cats out windows, they would slam doors, they would do the steering on a Chrysler, you know, they would do this sort of thing. And if you hear a 90-year-old guy get right in your face and describe to you how beautiful a water drip is, just a water drip, just that, let's see if I can get it. And he made me watch the drip and how it worked, how it exploded a hole in the water. There was a nail keg with water in it, and then it would heal up and blow that water back out. So it made a little whistle at the end, go pooh. And then he'd show me how to do that sound. That just changed me forever. So I think I was just at the right time when, just as television was coming in, I was right there on the cusp of blacks and whites in Georgia, in a small town, in a grocery store, on a black street on the white side of town. How rare was all that at this particular time when Selma, March on Selma, is happening, and I'm hearing all these stories told? That's where it all comes from.
Do you have warm-ups that you go through, like some version of singing the scales or anything like that?
I do a dog bark. And I pull it in the distance, way back in the back of my mouth. I do a lot of sounds for animals by inhaling, and I can, by doing that, I can hear how much, I can inventory where my voice is, and if I've got all the resonance, and I do a honk. So you'll hear me sometimes before I go out. That's pretty much, I can tell where everything is, and if I hear, I can I can clear things up, or I can drink some water. Those are the only two that I really do, and. Yeah, I don't. Sometimes if I've got, if you know, it's pollen season, I'll woo, kind of honks. I'll do a little those things to get the resonance of the nasal tones going. But that's it.
Do you have like any particular diet or things you eat or drink or try to avoid eating or drinking to keep your mouth and voice in the right condition?
I found that giving up dairy really, really helped my voice a lot. It just makes it clean. And the only real nasty secret that pretty much all opera and singers and even actors do is a thing called a neti pot. And that's it looks like a gravy boat that you put saline solution and you pour it in one nostril and out the other. Maybe as a radio person you would do that too, but you've got to do it in privacy and don't talk about it. It can be like The Exorcist. And if someone catches you walking, oh my God, what are you doing? No, no, you know. It's horrible. But yeah. Now the cat's out of the bag. All these NPR people, you can picture Nina Totenberg pouring nasal solution through her nasal passages. Yeah. Yeah. Justice Souter. Yeah, right.
Sorry. So you graduated from Harvard Business School.
I did. Mm-hmm.
And you worked for Newsweek.
Mm-hmm.
And while you were at, either in the context of Harvard Business School or Newsweek, did you find that your capacity to do mouth sounds ever came into play in those places?
I wish I could give you the visual. If they call on you at Harvard Business School, and it's a big arena of about 80 to 90 people, and there's a teacher in the middle of this, and he called that, this is a financial course, and he said, Mr. Newman, lay out the case. And a case is a business situation. Explain the situation. You're at a meeting with 90 people, and you have to explain it and say what you would do. The professor called on me. I wasn't prepared. And I went into my impression of a housefly. And I stood up and I flapped my hands on either side. I held them up at my shoulders and flapped them like little wings. And I made a buzzing sound. And I sort of ambled my way back to the back of the classroom. And it's, like I say, it's a steep pitched classroom. And I went and went. And I landed on the back wall with one foot elevated in the air. I was just flat against the wall. and the teacher actually started stuttering. He just didn't know where to slot that in, had no idea what to do with that. And he eventually, he went on and called on someone else. I peeled myself off the wall and sat back down. And at the end of class, I went up to him and said, "Professor Hayes, I really hope that some way I could make this up." And he said, "I thought that was a very creative solution." And I passed the course.
Tell me about how you came to be on Prairie Home Companion.
When I did one of the first shows I did back in, it was 1980, and the show had just gone nationally syndicated. I mean, I had never heard of the show. The author's tour for this book, Mouth Sounds, I walked out there, and where was that? Yeah, I guess it was in Minnesota then. He wasn't doing as much traveling then. I walked out on stage, and I didn't know enough that you shouldn't do this. I walked out on stage, and the first thing he went, "Oh, this is an author of a book, Mouth Sounds, Fred Newman." And I walk out, and I go, "Hi, my name is Baby Elizabeth," to Garrison. And he went, "Oh, Baby Elizabeth, come sit in my lap." And I had a harmonica with me. And he said, "You have a harmonica? Play me a little song." So I did a blues song called Baby Blues. I remember, "My diapers ain't sweet, I got prickly heat, I say I got them bad old baby blues." And Butch Thompson on the piano came in behind me. We did this blues piece that, you know, it was the best. I said, "This guy is amazing." He knew exactly what to do. He was so quick on his feet. It was very improvisational. And I would drop everything anytime he would say, "Come on the show." So over the next few years, I would come on, July 4th show with Tom Keith, who was guy's been with him doing sound effects since day one, I would come on and do that. And so when Tom Keith in 19, it was right around 2000, decided not to travel anymore, Garrison called me up. Actually, he left a message on my phone. "Hi, Fred, this is Garrison." And my phone cut him off because his voice is so low, it thought no one was on the phone. Three times, "Fred, it's Garrison Keith, would you..." Garrison, oh, golly, you know. But eventually he got through to me and invited me to travel. So I do all the travel shows, which are probably 90% more than 90% of the shows. And I live in New York City, and I just meet them on weekends when we travel.
So at what point in the process are you brought in, you know, before the show? Does Garrison come and say, "All right, Fred, we're going to do a skit about this. I need you to do that." Or how does that work?
It's always varied. 99% of that show springs out of the head of Zeus, which is Garrison, and it's such a joy to work with such a creative spirit. So we come together normally on a Friday night, and we will get a few scripts, two or three scripts, maybe a Guy Noir script, maybe something else, some of the major scripts, and they'll be in pretty good order. They're really for Garrison to hear on their feet, and what kind of choices we make. We don't talk about it. We just get up and read it one time. It's just very much it's very much a work in progress right up until the very second we go out. And we might get a note that, "Let's change. We're going to cut a couple of pages. Just follow me." And we'll change it because of timing or something else. The show is a big piece of jazz. And when we're just out there together, pretty much he may say, "Well, let's do something with office supplies." And he will go out and make up a story. We almost never rehearse those. And we just go and just, it could be a rhubarb. There may be a script, but I know better than to follow the script. "No, not a yak, but a yak being squeezed by a mastodon." So he's always coming up with something one step beyond, which is really fun.
Fred Newman from A Prairie Home Companion. Fred, thank you so much.
Oh, been a pleasure.